Welcome to episode 6 in the 5th season of Justice with John Carpe, a podcast from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms. I'm the show's producer, Kevin Steele, and with us today is Quebec lawyer Olivier Séguin. He's here to tell us about a case he's working on in his home province involving a young student, a gender transition, and a teacher who has refused to lie to that student's parents about that transition. And now the teacher is suing the province, the education ministry, because that's where the problem originates. The government telling schools they have to keep these transitions hidden from parents. Olivier, go ahead, tell us the story.
So, it's a teacher, grade 9, I think, in your vocabulary. She teaches to 14 years old and 15 years old. She's a history teacher in a high school, a private high school, English speaking. Although the fact that it is private has nothing to do in our affair, since, as we will see, everything is based on a guideline from the government. So it may be private or public, it doesn't change anything. So, beginning of the year, September, she's being told by the director of the school that she would have to designate one of her students, so initially a girl, with the masculine pronoun, because this student has asked it to the school, basically. She accepted it. But she was also told by the school that the parents should not know that, of course, because the kid asked that to be confidential on behalf of her parents, and that she would have to correct the exams, the homeworks, the report card, and also to hide this information in the context of the parent and teacher, there's an appointment. There's basically two times a year, parents and teacher meet together to discuss about the evolution of the kid. So she was advised to hide this information to the parents even during this appointment. She was really uncomfortable to have this information hidden from her parents, and she couldn't abide by the rule that was required of her to basically, in her view, and I agree with her, to lie to the parents, because the parents, indeed, they come to meet the teacher to have an idea of how the kid is evolving, everything going smoothly, going good. So important matters like that, in the view of my client, and of course of every one of us, if we were placed in the parent's position, we would feel that we would be lied to. So that was the impression of my client. And that's when she officially advised the school that she intends not to respect that rule, and she came to us. The school, because it was an ongoing problem, we're in the middle of the year. It's difficult to fire a teacher in the middle of the year, so they accepted to let her send an email to the parent instead, hoping that they wouldn't realize what's going on and why do we receive an email. It turned out that the parent accepted it, didn't ask questions. So for now, the problem is somewhat the problem is managed until the next parent and teacher meeting, which is going to happen in spring. So what we have to understand in this matter is that the school applied regulations. It's not regulations. In fact, they thought that they were applying the law as it was explained in a guide that was produced by the Minister of Education that was called Improve Understanding and Practices for Sexual and Gender Diversity in School, a guide for educational institutions. And within that guide, they basically quote sections of the law that have to do with the Register of Civil Status in Quebec. We see the Directeur de l'État Civil, which is basically, I would say, your official. I'm sure you have something like that in Alberta too. It's basically to have your name officially changed, for example. So they use the rules that applied to the Register of Civil Status to say that it should be the same in schools. And we have to say that they pick and choose different sections of the code, and they basically made the law say something that, at least in our view, it doesn't say. I must say that the particular situation of how should school treat cases like that is nowhere in the law per se. So they dressed an analogy without saying that it was an analogy, but they dressed an analogy to basically represent the law in a way that it's not. So it's not really a guideline. It's not really a regulation. It's the law as they see it, let's say.
Well,
I
was going to say the school thought it was following the law because it was following the guide that had been issued by the Ministry of Education. But you're saying that the guide misrepresented the law, or in your opinion, misrepresented the law? Is that
what it's actually not at? So clear. Yeah. Our understanding, according to my understanding of the law, yes, they misrepresented the law. If only because they didn't say that it was actually an analogy. That was something that was applicable for the Register of Civil Status. That being said, I've been looking into, I would say, how the institutions read the law. As far as I am concerned, and I'm still convinced of that, the law is at the effect that for a kid of 14 years old and older, yes, they can ask the register to change their sex or their name, so their mention of the sex or their name. And then the Register of Civil Status has to notify this, this demand to the parents. And the parents have a certain number of days to object. If they object, the Register of Civil Status cannot change the names or the mention of the sex. It has to be decided by the court. And the court may or may not decide that the change in the of name or sex be granted or not.
Okay.
I must say that, one thing is clear. If you want to change your name, the procedure that I just explained is right. So you have to, for a kid of 14 and older, you have to ask by yourself. You can do it by yourself. You have to ask the register. The register notify it to the parents, and the parents object or don't say anything. Weirdly enough, it's not clearly mentioned when it comes to sex, to the sex mentioned, the mention of the sex. So it would mean that according to, let's say, the other point of view, you can change your name. You cannot change your name without the approval of the parents, but you can change your sex. Could you believe it?
Yeah, that sounds a little bit odd.
It's very odd.
Yeah, so maybe it's not quite like that. If I would, of course, lean towards your interpretation. to get back to the story then, there is this teacher and there is a springtime apparent teacher interview coming up. The teacher, she has maintained her position. And as I understand it from the press release that we put out, the school then said, we have no choice but to fire you, or we will fire you if you inform the parents. And then at that point, the teacher decides not to challenge the school, but to challenge the government and their guide, that is the procedures. Is that correct, flow of events?
Yeah, it's correct, because indeed the school, in good faith, so to speak, in good faith, thought that it was following the law. As I said, the law is not so clear in a way or the other. And I could go on with the whole story. I studied the bill in 2016 that led to some changes in the law that I'm going to talk about. But at least, let's say, the law was explained in the guide and said that it should be such. So the school decided to follow the law as it thought that it should do, basically. So at the end of the day, we don't sue the school. We don't really care about the school. What we want is to solve the problem at the root. So it's not the school that's at the root of the problem. It is the guide. And I hope that it is not the law, but we shall see about that. The changes that occurred in 2016. So what happened in 2016 in Quebec, there was a bill called Bill 103. It changed a few things pertaining to basically gender issues, trans rights, etc., etc. Made a change to the Quebec Charter of Human Rights to add gender identity to the criteria that were protected. And they also changed a few things in the civil code, which is the equivalent of our common law. And those changes were... the bill was presented on May 26th of 2016, and it became a law on June 10. So basically, there was 2 weeks before the presentation of the bill to the National Assemblée Nationale, so the our provincial chamber, and there was no debate, or almost no debate. The only groups that were entitled to present their comments were basically lobby groups of a certain kind that we can imagine. Psychologists didn't have the time to produce anything. The Quebec Bar basically said that, we don't have a lot of time to think about it. They presented a factum of a couple pages. Nobody had the time to think about it. And if you look at different declarations that were made by the minister, Vallée at the time, who presented the bill, and the parties on the other side that were asking questions, it's apparent that, first of all, Minister Vallée doesn't really understand the bill that it is presenting, because that she's presenting, because at one place in let's say press scrum, she explains the law in a certain way, and at another place she says otherwise. For example, she says she said that for the change of sex, the parents should be advised, as for the change of name. And then when she's being asked the same question in chamber, she doesn't know exactly what to answer. She says that from now on, they will have to consult a psychologist, a social worker, or a sexologist. Is that the word?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, my feeling is that it's been drafted very fast. I don't know by who. I suspect by groups themselves. I feel that the minister didn't really understand the law that it was, that she was presenting, and the people who asked questions didn't understand neither. Everybody agreed. It just looked good. It looked like something that was just positive, like it would protect young people, young trans people that didn't grow up in the right body. And nobody asked questions. So the debate that we're going to have eventually in front of the court, of course, will have to do with what was the intention of the legislator. But it's a good question to ask, because if you look, I think that the legislator was confused at the time. I'm not sure that there's a clear answer about that. And it's very worrying, I must say. Very worrying.
Let me ask you this. Did it seem at the time, or from what you can recall, that parents understood that they were losing rights here, or that they didn't have this right at all after the legislation passed? That is the thing that I'm wondering, because now, of course, they're trying to, it seems to me, that they are trying to present it as a fait accompli. It happened, everybody accepted it, and now, even though you act like you didn't know the implications, you should have known the implications, and it's a done deal. You can't go back. Did people at the time understand they were losing this right? Did parents understand at the time they were losing this right?
If you look at, I made a press review of different articles that were published at the time, and it was basically everybody was applauding that, like every parties of the opposition. No questions were asked. It was like all people smiling. Looking back, it's very strange. I'm wondering, like, if you go back in 2016, I don't really remember what was like the political climate in 2016. But I feel that all those things that, let's say, are linked somewhat to what we call today wokeism or gender ideology, stuff like that, we're not, at least in Quebec, we're not clear. It was not in our, let's say, understanding. I don't think that I knew about the word woke. I don't think myself that I heard, but we're always a bit later in Quebec than in the rest of America. But one thing is clear: the ideological aspect of the bill, that from now, looking back, to me it seems clear. But at the time, I'm not sure. So my feeling is that the way that it was presented, and it's not clear. I'm a lawyer. I studied the law like no one did probably before, at least pertaining to those this aspect of the law. And my feeling is that everybody thought that from now on, yes, a kid of 14 years old could ask to change the mention of the sex in the civil status. But the parents thought, because it was said in press scrum, the parents thought that they would be advised if something like that happened, and they had a number of days to protest. Because indeed, it's a bit strange that to change your name, you need the approval of your parents, but not to change your sex. Doesn't really make sense. does it?
Right. No, I understand what you're saying, but they're going a little bit beyond that. They're saying that you can do this at school informally and your parents won't be notified. In this challenge that you're making to the courts, and it's the teacher challenging the government's guide and procedures regarding the transgender issues, are you effectively saying that they are basing the guide on false law or incomplete law or unknown law, untested law? What exactly are you going to challenge them on here?
Yes. So my well, first of all, I say that what the analogy that they draw to state how schools should regulate situations like that is not a good analogy, because the law doesn't say what they think it says. And apart from that, I say that this politic, I don't exactly know how to qualify it. It's not really a rule of law. It's not a guideline. This politic is irrational. It violates the freedom of conscience of my clients, of course. My client, her freedom of expression, and I would say the traditional prerogative of the parents that have to care about their kids and have the information necessary to take decisions or help them accompany them in their struggles if they have some issues of the sort. I also draw an analogy, let's say not an analogy, but I would say a deduction, putting different principles together. For one, indeed, the parents have moral authority toward their family. The loi sur l'instruction publique, my apology. So basically the public Education Act, it probably sounds like that. Okay. The Public Education Act makes mandatory, and it's all right, that kids should go to school until they are 16 years old. And indeed, the Public Education Act also says, which is congruent with the moral authority that the parents have toward their family, so the Public Education Act also says that the parents have the right to choose the school of their kids. They have to choose according to the information that they have. And if we don't give them the information about something that's so important, how could we say that, first of all, they have the moral authority toward their kids, but how could we say that they have the right to choose the school of their kids if they're deprived of vital information like that?
But to be clear, in this particular case where you're representing the teacher, the parents aren't a party to it, right? It's simply the teacher challenging the government. The parents at this point in this particular case are not party to your suit. Is that correct?
It's correct. But the reason why they're not party is because they're not entitled to know. They should be parties, of course, but to be a party, they should know about that. And this is exactly what we're contesting.
Right.
Okay. So yes, we make a claim on the Section 7 of the Charter. For those who know, it's children's aid. It's basically the principle of, let's say, the right of parents. But I don't like to speak of the rights of parents. I like to speak of responsibilities of parents toward their kids and the obligation that they have to assume their responsibilities with, you know, basing their decision on proper information. So the parents don't know. Everybody knows at school. Everybody knows at school that the kid is not of the same gender that she was last year. The whole Quebec could know about this thing without knowing the names. But the parents, the parents themselves don't know, which is part of the problem, which okay. is at the core of the problem.
Right. Perhaps for a little context, you can go into an area that you had mentioned previously in discussions and exchanges with us. And that is that this case is coming at something of a sensitive time in Quebec politics, in that there was, I guess, some dispute as to whether the minister was involved in this, because the minister had taken a public position against mixed bathrooms, I think it was, and that seemed to send a signal that the minister wasn't necessarily on side with what the transgender ideologues are claiming at the moment. Could you tell us a little bit about that situation, just to give us some context out here in the rest of Canada, what's happening inside Quebec right now that makes this particularly sure. contentious?
Okay, so I would say a lot of different events have happened in Quebec in the last, I would say, let's say the last 2 years in particular, that shocked, I would say, shocked the public because basically it makes no sense, according to me at least. Okay, so different examples. There was one school that sent a letter to the parents of the parents of their students to advise them that there was a certain person, a certain teacher that was nor a male nor a not a male and not a female, and she should be called, I don't know how to pronounce it, MX, so Mix Martin, instead of Mr. or Mrs. we should call them Mix Martin. So the kids have a teacher that's called, they call Mix instead of Mr. or Mrs. So that was one. And I would say that I read the letter that the school sent to parents, and it's almost sci-fi. It's absolutely mind-blowing. It was talked a lot in the press here. And there was a different number of cases. There was one, another one where a school, a certain school decided to, following this guy that I'm talking about, that we're attacking, decided to basically abolish toilets for the boys and for the girls and have mixed toilet. And that was basically to accommodate, let's say, those that didn't fit into the binary sexes. And I would say other, so those are the one which were directly linked with basically the sector of education, but there were also other stuff. Like more recently, I don't know if, I think that you heard about that in the rest of Canada, but a doctor has been suspended for 3 months for basically having told one of his or her patient that even though she would take male hormones and maybe have surgery, she would still be genetically female. So it was punished by 3 months of suspension, which is a lot. As a professional working in Quebec, I can tell you that being suspended one day is a lot. Symbolically speaking, being suspended 3 months is a lot. So the government, and honestly, I'm not optimistic about that, but the government decided to basically deal with the angriness that was growing up in Quebec by naming a committee of three person that had the task of basically making inquiries, let's say, about what's going on with this growing transgender issue that was not an issue 10 years ago, but that seemed to be such a problem now. And so we'll see what happens with that. Knowing the people that were named on this committee, I'm not so optimistic about their will to change anything about the blunder that they did. At the end of the day, it seems clear to me that we can speak of this guide that was written clearly by ideologues, and it's very clear. It's very clear. I'll just, if you allow me, I'll quote some part of the guide just to make you understand how it's evident that that there's an ideological orientation. Gender is a spectrum that is widely viewed as encompassing two poles, male and female, but which nuances between the two extremes and outside of these two extremes are possible, personal, and legitimate. So gender is not two pole between masculine and feminine. It could be outside. Well, where outside?
Okay.
So
yeah, that's fairly extreme.
It is. It is.
And, vague, actually. It's not extreme.
It's very big. Honestly, when you read a guide like that, a so-called guide like that, you cannot trust the people that are behind that guide, because the ideological charge is so big. They redefine things. They don't refine our understanding of the difference, let's say, between gender and the sex. Because yes, an argument could be made, and I wouldn't disagree with that, that the gender is basically a layer on the sexes. So I'm dressed as a man, you're dressed as a man. If I were a woman, I would probably dress as a woman. It would be my persona. So it's something that could be said. I wouldn't disagree with that. But they don't only decouple gender and sex, but they also pretend that it could be something else than that, something out of this spectrum. It's clearly ideological.
Okay. Well, I just want to read something from the press release, the Justice Center press release, that I found intriguing and may help explain what we've been talking about with this guide. And this is near the bottom of the press release. I'm going to quote it here. Le Devoir reported that the guide was the result of collaboration between 1, the Ministry of Justice, 2, Ministry of Family, 3, the Office Against Homophobia and Transphobia, 4, the Research Chair in Sexual Diversity and Gender Plurality, Université du Québec et Montréal, and 5, the National Table Against Homophobia and Transphobia in Education Networks. That doesn't mention, of course, anything from the Ministry of Education. And
weirdly enough, and yeah. At the end of the day, that's one of the reason why I'm led to think that the minister doesn't follow. So yes, it's a good idea indeed to name a committee of person that would have to inquire about what's going on, because our government and his different ministries seem to have given a blank check to groups, trusting them, thinking that they were basically only defending what was basically their turf. So dysphoria, a disease, suffering, that it was their thing. And it's riddled with mistakes. Whoever wrote this guide, we will probably never know for a fact. Whoever wrote this guide made full of different mistakes, little things. For example, they quote a section, they say it's 75.1 instead of 75.1. Various things like that. I could lying like a dozen mistakes, mistake. It is clearly not reviewed by lawyers. It's clearly not reviewed by serious people in the government. Seems clear to me. And it might be worrying for a guide like this. But when you get to think, as I do, that the law itself and the regulations might also be basically wrote by those group. Yes, there's good reason to think that that we should inquire. Another example, I told you in the beginning of our conversation that according to the Register of Civil Status, for a change of sex, one doesn't have to inform his parents when he's age 14 or older. I agree that the law is poorly written and that it is confusing. But it's not what I read. It's not what I read when I read the law. And I'm pretty sure of what I say. Pretty sure. That being said, it's not the interpretation of the Register of Civil Status. Why is it the case? We don't know. Who's there? Who takes decision? Who writes those forms? Those groups are very well organized. And there are reasons to be worried.
Okay. Since we've issued this press release, in French and English, of course, have you yourself attracted any media attention because of this publicity?
Yes, indeed. So in the press release, the Justice Center referred to Le Devoir, as you said it earlier. So Le Devoir answered to that. So yes, there's a bit of media attention. I think that it's just getting started, because basically, the challenge that I'm carrying on with the guide, I'm not sure yet. I don't want to announce anything as of now. But if indeed it is true that the guide is based on what is their interpretation of the law, what is the government interpretation of the law? Well, of course, I disagree with this interpretation. But if it is true that it is the law, then I disagree that it should be the law. I think that it violates the Canadian Charter and the Quebec Charter as well. And we'll see what we do. I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet. But we might enlarge the scope of our challenge, let's say.
Oh, you mean in terms of rights or in terms of applicants? Enlarge it how? You don't have to tell me, you know, specifics. I just need to know, when you say enlarge it, are you talking about making a bigger case or take it to a higher court? I'm not sure what you mean by expand.
Well, what I'm saying is that if it is true that, let's say, the rights of my client teacher are violated by the guide, as well as the rights of the parents, I add, and to the kid, ultimately, and that it is legal according to the law? Well, I would say that it's not legal according to the Constitution. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I guess we got a ways to go here. Just early days, and I know that you're probably going to attract more attention to it. Just to be clear, in the press releases, and it is our decision not to name the school and not to name the child and not to name the parents or the teacher, because really the issue here that you're dealing with is with the government. I just want to make sure that people understand that aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we ask ourselves for the confidentiality of the school and of my client, not because my client wanted her name to be confidential, but just because we didn't want to put the kid on the spot. And we wanted to be free to speak of that publicly without putting the kid on the spot, basically. And yes, we do think that what really matters is not, at least for me, for us, for the Justice Center. Of course, there's the case of which is a really true case. There's the case of this teacher and of the kid and of the parents. But more largely than that, this situation is not caused by the school, not the school alone. It's caused by something that's much bigger. That is the story of every Quebecer who lives now, and especially those who have children.
Okay. I just want to ask one sort of general question about Quebec and the French language. I'll explain why. It seems to me, this is my interpretation of everything that I've been able to pull out in helping with the press release and talking to you, that they are trying to present this as a fait accompli, that this is the way it is, you know, and this is the way it's going to be going forward. Parents don't have rights for a child of 14, and, well, you don't like to use the word rights, but they have no rights and responsibilities towards a child of 14. And that's the way it always was and will always be. And that seems to me like a form of gaslighting. And I just wondered if you guys in Quebec use that term at all. You had spoken about how long it takes for, or how long it has taken for wokeism to sort of become evident in Quebec. Do you use this term gaslighting at all?
Not really. I know what it means, but no, we don't okay. use that. I don't think that there's a proper translation.
Okay. Well, it's based on a movie, so I guess you'd have to have a French version of the movie. Well, thanks, Olivier, so much for taking the time to explain this to us. I know it's a difficult case, and I really wish you well going forward. And I do hope to hear more from Quebec in the future and from you.
Sure. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be here with you.
Because we've got a little extra time here, I'm going to tack on this podcast a reading of the press release Olivier and I refer to in the show. We both worked on this, along with colleagues at the Justice Center. News release, February 20th, 2024. Headline, Quebec Teacher Challenges Education Minister's Gender Transition Policy. Montreal, Quebec. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms announces the launch of a constitutional challenge in Quebec's Superior Court against the Ministry of Education. This action is brought on behalf of a teacher who refused to lie to the parents of a 14-year-old student seeking a female-to-male gender transition, as her school administration had ordered her to do. Following directives in the Education Minister's Guide and Procedures on Trans and Non-Binary Persons' Gender Identity, the student's Montreal High School created a set of procedures to make it illegal to inform parents or guardians when their child seeks a gender transition. At the beginning of October 2023, school administrators advised teachers that they should designate the 14-year-old student with the masculine pronouns he, him in class. But when dealing with the student's parents, teachers were ordered to use the student's given name and feminine pronouns. They gave this order even though there was no evidence or suspicion of parental abuse. The teacher informed the administration that while she agreed to observe the student's pronoun preferences, the teacher objected to the requirement that she lie to parents about their child's gender change, especially during an upcoming parent-teacher interview. That interview did not occur. Instead, the school allowed the teacher to submit a written report to the student, copied to the parents, which avoided the use of pronouns. While granting this exception, the school made it clear that the teacher would be obligated to meet with the parents during a parent-teacher interview scheduled for the spring if the parents requested such interview. The administrators notified the teacher that if she disclosed any information about the child's in-school gender transition during that spring interview, the teacher would be fired immediately. At that point, the teacher, assisted by the Justice Center, filed the constitutional challenge to nullify the Minister of Education's guide and procedures because, notably, they, quote, contravene parental rights protected by Section 7 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, in defiance of the principles of fundamental justice and without sufficient justification in a free and democratic society, unquote. The teacher also believes that the guide and procedures violate the teacher's Section 2 charter right to freedom of conscience. Having to lie to her pupils' parents was the last straw for the plaintiff teacher. The teacher stated, I couldn't live with myself if I did that. I won't look them in the eye and intentionally lie about the fact that we are enabling their child to undergo a significant psychosocial intervention without their knowledge. According to the teacher's lawyer, Olivier Séguin, this would be the first time that a court action raised freedom of conscience without also raising freedom of religion. Section 2A of the Charter guarantees both freedom of conscience and religion. Mr. Séguin explains, quote, "It's true that the prohibition on lying is common to all religions, but my client's conscientious objection is not religious in nature," unquote. The teacher went on to say, quote, "Transparent collaboration with parents is essential to my role as a teacher and critical for the long-term well-being of children. Lying to parents about how we are treating their children or about what is going on with children at school violates the principles of my vocation," unquote. While it's true that the law does not expressly mention how schools should handle cases like this one, Mr. Séguin says the guide's authors appear to have issued a ministerial directive on the sly through a quote-unquote guidance intended for schools in which they make the law say things it simply does not say. For example, in its section entitled Legal Framework, page 8, the guide cites section 60 of the Civil Code of Quebec, which states that a request for a name change may be made on the initiative of a minor aged 14 or over. But the guide ignores section 62, located right next to it, which states that parents must be notified of the request for a change of name and that they are permitted to object. The guide's authors also cite Article 71 of the same civil code, which also says, like section 60, a request for a change of gender may be made on the initiative of a minor aged 14 or over. But again, the authors of the guide fail to note Article 73, which states that parents must be able to object to any such change. Mr. Séguin does not consider Minister of Education Bernard Dranville responsible for the admissions. The Quebec newspaper Le Devoir had already pointed out that by opposing mixed-sex toilets in schools, he had placed himself in contradiction with, quote, the recommendations of his own ministry, unquote, i.e. the recommendations set out in the guide. In the same article, Le Devoir reported that the guide was the result of collaboration between 1. The Ministry of Justice and 2. The Ministry of Family, 3. The Office Against Homophobia and Transphobia, 4. The Research Chair in Sexual Diversity and Gender Plurality, Université du Québec à Montréal, and 5. The National Table Against Homophobia and Transphobia in Education Networks. Mr. Séguin says he doesn't believe the omissions are unintended incompetence, stating, quote, "The irregularities with which the guide is riddled are both too obvious and too numerous to see anything other than a desire to mislead readers by falsely claiming to translate the letter of the law. I see it as a form of usurpation of power, a denial of democracy," unquote. As for his client's position, he says, quote, "Secrecy towards parents, which in practice amounts to lying to them, is a serious violation of the legal contract that binds the state and its citizens," unquote. End